What's up? What's up? Welcome to episode 101 of Oh no. It's 101. It's this one.
It's 101.
101. Episode of Value Town. I'm Chan-Man V and he's Noxious. And it's just the two of us. We're having a bro episode this week.
I know. What's going on with that? Did you just not find any guests to come on, Chan-Man? What is this?
Orange was supposed to come on, but then he had a family emergency, and it was just hard getting somebody last minute. You know how it is. I can't pull off miracles every single week.
I can confirm. It's actually pretty tough to get people.
The gang wars
on the
is going
show
on.
Sometimes, especially in the holiday season too, right? Like there's so much going on and just in general. So I'm pretty happy nonetheless that you and I are here together.
I'm telling you, man, we're having a bro episode. Yeah. You know what that means, guys? That means that we get to talk about our janky decks.
And no one's here to criticize us.
That's right. Nobody's here to laugh at our decks and, you know, that sort of thing. So you guys, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a off-the-cuff episode. But we do have a lot of fun decks to talk about, which we'll do in just a second. Talk a little bit about meta, maybe, you know, just what we've been seeing, probably briefly.
Yep.
Got some cards to talk about. Mechatoris Workshop. Noxious has a couple, and we've got a viewer that has a couple too for us to take a look at. And then we've got some questions from patrons and other folks that have emailed them to valuetown@chamanv.tv. So can't wait to read those out. But our week in Hearthstone, we're going to start off as usual. Oh, yeah, Smilestone too, guys. We still got the Smilestone milestone. So
the Smilestone milestone.
That's right. We'll be doing that too.
Yeah.
But our week in Hearthstone. So what have you been up to this week?
So I feel like overall this week I've been taking it more lightly. Like I've been loving the meta personally. I'm really happy about the way... Like, I'm really happy in the state of Hearthstone right now. It's not a common consensus. I feel like among the casual crowd, there's a lot of disgruntlement, but I think it's not because of the metagame necessarily as much as it is because of other factors, which we can touch on a bit later. But I've been playing nothing but janky decks. I've changed my streaming schedule to be more in line with my dad duties require of me. That is something that...
I know, man.
I've had to do that. I think it was very much needed. And it's been fun so far. I mean, I can just play 2 hours of a jank deck and I'm enjoying it. And that's my stream for the day. You know, that's going to be my schedule of the day. And I think people enjoy that too. They notice I'm not burnt out. I don't have enough time to get burnt out on any one deck and any one ladder grind. So it's been great.
Yeah, it's definitely all about quality than quantity sometimes, you know. It's like, you know, as long as... You're keeping yourself sane and trying to, keep the game actually enjoyable for yourself. That's all that really matters, you know. That's.
I'm gonna stop you right there for a second. Your title on Twitch is Unfiltered End of 2016 Special with Destiny, Richard Lewis, and Chan Man.
No wonder everybody is like coming to see it. Oh god, man.
It's a scam. Right, you should probably switch that.
Yeah. Let me change it. Oh gosh, this is definitely an off the hook. Everybody's like, "Oh my god, Unfiltered? What?"
No, man. No, Unfiltered is not today.
It was yesterday, guys. You can watch the VODs later.
Actually, do that. If you're here for Unfiltered, just help yourself.
Help yourself.
And watch the VODs.
Help yourself and watch the VODs.
Yeah.
Okay, let me get this. How do I update this thing?
You changed the name?
I changed. Already, I did. Okay, there we go. Yeah. Look at all these people. All these people are from Unfiltered. Sorry about that, guys. Sorry about that. It's actually Value Town. So I just posted part two of Unfiltered VOD. Go watch it if you haven't already on YouTube. Skamaz. Yeah, exactly.
Indeed.
But yeah, so that's good to hear that you're having a good time playing some cool decks. What kind of decks have you been playing?
I mean, I've been trying out a lot of the Inner Fire Priests. I've tried out Evolve Shaman. I've played a ton of Evolve Shaman.
Dude,
and I
Evolve
think that
Shaman's
deck
awesome.
Is bonkers.
It's good, right?
I think it's got to be one of the most underrated decks in the meta.
I've been saying that. Totally. Yeah.
But I can't believe how few people in the competitive scene really take it seriously. I think that deck is a real thing. It is something you could bring in a competitive environment on ladder, at least, and do very well with. It is, after all, a mid-range deck.
Right.
With a slight twist. So it keeps all the strengths of Shaman and doesn't really lose out on anything.
Yeah, I think the only reason it's not played is what we talked about before. There's that mid-range shaman and that aggro shaman might just be a tiny, tiny bit better because of the pace of it. But if you get evolve, if you can keep evolve, or you can get doppelganger like on turn six or seven, then you're going to win. Like, you have this mid-range, this mid-game burst that not very many decks I can think of right now have even the capabilities of doing. And that's on top of all that early game that every single shaman has right now.
Yeah, they all keep the same shell of tunnel trogging, you know, you to death.
Yeah, tunnel trogging. And I think yours is a little different variety because I took the Jade, a little bit more of the Jade package approach versus the Spirit Claw and you know, the spell damage, you know, just getting the three damage from the Spirit Claw. But yeah, it's, I think when you add the Bloodlust, it's like that evolve play into the Bloodlust finishes games almost every single time I get it. So it's extremely hard to deal with. There's like how many classes can, outside of maybe dragon fire potion, can clear 3 6 drops consistently?
Pretty much none. And even dragon fire, oftentimes, like, one of the 3 6 drops is often gonna stay alive afterwards, so, you know, one of them has to have 6 health and you're good to go. I think the biggest thing about the combo for me is just how, like, unexpected it is, right? It's a thing that people play nowadays, and it's kind of known, but the beginning of the deck looks so much like every other shaman that once that comes down, no one knows what's up. And that's the biggest, I guess, giveaway of how strong the deck is the surprise factor of it is powerful, and the gimmick of it isn't really noticeable because the consistency isn't that bad. Your deck still works out on average better than other decks, and Bloodlust is still a game winner even without Evolve. You don't even need to get the, you know, the double gangsters onto the board to get the Bloodlust value.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's evolved over time. It's evolved over time.
It's evolved.
My deck's evolved over time, and, you know, I'm to the point where I add things from below too, just because just getting some value from totoming is good. And like you said, like, classes, especially like Reno Lock and the classes that do have the removal, they're very selective. They're trying to get max value. And so when you just throw down totems, they're just like, I'm not going to use my removal on those low value cards. But then you just bloodlust them and you're just like, oh, fuck, that sucked, man.
As far as metagame goes, though, like, the most played deck this week, according to the meta snap, like the meta stats that were collected by some people in the competitive Hearthstone subreddit, are Reno Lock, Aggro Shaman, and Pirate Warrior. Still, they're the only decks that are kind of above 10%, which is interesting because Rogue, from every single discussion I have with everyone, is considered the most powerful. However, I think the deck is hard enough to play that it's not your go-to for ladder climbing. Like, that's what people are afraid of, probably, is the inconsistency that it occasionally runs into, where you don't get the right draw, and you don't know how to navigate the matchups with those awkward hands. So Rogue is still sitting, you know, pretty at 8.32% of the metagame, which is a pretty good chunk above something like Reno Priest, which is at 3%, but it's not as played as I expected.
Yeah, Reno Priest. Got Trump, you know, last week, right, obviously we were talking about decks with him, but I know he's been loving the Reno Priest recently, so I actually brought that just to take a look at too. But yeah, you're right. Anything that does well against aggro right now, I think is what's working in tandem with aggro in terms of the meta.
Sure.
Yeah, so Rogue's been definitely a popular thing. I don't know how many times I run into the questing adventurer into, you know, buff into, you know, Edwin Van Cleef, and it's just like GG right there. I can't do anything about it.
With Reno Priest is it's got so many good matchups across the board. Like, one of the notorious bad ones is Reno Lock, which is kind of what keeps it in check. But against mid-range Shaman, for instance, like, that's a deck you're happy to run into. You've got like a 55-45, and since there's, you know, a pretty good chunk of them on the ladder, that's a good matchup for you to run into. Surprisingly, though, Reno Priest struggles against Evolve Shaman, which we just talked about.
Yep.
So it'll beat aggro, it'll beat mid-range, but if you give it Evolve Shaman, oops, you know, there we go. Now here's this 3-6 drops board you have to deal with. I don't have a Twisting Nether in my deck. I don't have the luxury of clearing that stuff.
They got Dragonfire Potion for one of them, sure, but not for the second one. And I went in the Jade package, so the Jade Golems even put pressure on him. So priests have a hard time against that Evolve deck for me. So that's usually not too much of an issue.
Yeah, I think Reno Priest also started seeing more play when Reno Mage came up. Like, we had this.
I know.
I think last week's meta of the week was like, oh, Reno Mage is good. Let's play that stuff. And Reno Priest comes up, says, oh, there's Reno Mage around. Let me just queue into it.
Let's just bring up the Reno Priest. And heal myself. At least there's different versions of it for sure. And I brought up more of a dragon version just because the dragon version tends to do well against aggro because of the taunts that are inherently part of the dragon package, like Guardian and Wormrest Agent. So this is the one I know Trump's been playing. He might have tweaked it a little bit, but I know Trump's played a lot of this, and I tried playing it too. And I've played a lot of just the priest we talked, well, a dragon priest, definitely a more refined dragon priest than we talked about last week. And I don't know, when I played this deck, I just feel like, God, I wish I had two of these. Like, yeah, there's so many
every
of those
time,
cards.
Right?
It's like, God, I wish I had two, you know, Shadowward Pains or Shadowward Deaths or Twilight Guardians or whatever it is, right? And so I actually feel when I know it might not be right because I haven't played enough of this, but I just feel this deck is inferior just to the straight up Dragon Priest.
I'll say something, though, which is important to keep in mind, and that is once you get past rank 5, the metagame changes, or at least it should. The landscape of the metagame changes the higher you go, and it includes less of the quote-unquote brain-dead aggro decks, right? You have more of those, you know, mid-range decks, of the Reno decks, and that's where Reno Priest will shine, where Dragon Priest may struggle a bit more. But if you're aiming to climb from, like, the bottom of rank 20 all the way up to rank 5, it's probably better to play a Dragon Priest straight up, because it's less gimmicky, more consistent, and the range of stuff you're going to hit is likely going to be exactly what you want, right? Like, the more aggressive lists, they're going to be fine against. So it's really important to consider that the Dragon Priest will excel where Reno, like, for one of the matchups where, you know, Dragon Priest is better than the Reno Priest is, like, Evolve Shaman. Like, that's one of the ones where
Rogue
that's
too.
The case.
Rogue too.
However, like, Reno Priest is going to be slightly better against something like Freeze Mage than Dragon Priest. You don't see much of it right now, but there was a pocket of time where that was a thing.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, as long as you know how to play, like, the Freeze Mage, as long as you had Shadowward Pain, you were pretty good against the Freeze Mage. But, so, I mean, once you learn all these nuances, it's not as bad. But I do agree with that there's a certain point where this deck is better than the straight Dragon, but I think it actually extends into Legend. I think once you get into Legend, this deck is better than the straight Dragon, because I'm still climbing past rank 5. I still climb much quicker with just the straight Dragon Priest than this one.
You still see
Aggro Shaman. You still see,
because Pirate Warrior is really, really good against Dragon Priest.
Yeah, it is.
And, like, Reno Priest has, like, a 50-50 with it. It's kind of a coin flip. Whereas I think Dragon Priest just gets steamrolled, right? Like, you look at your minions get destroyed.
It's not as bad as you think. Like, once you've played it a ton, you kind of feel like it's probably, like, I'd say 40-60 or something like that.
Yeah, it's 40-60,
45 or something. It's not bad by any means, because if you can get Wormrest Agent, the worst thing that can happen to you is if they get the Pirate Opening into the Fiery War Axe, which seems like it happens freaking, like, almost every game, right?
Yeah, it really feels the hard mulligan, but
if you can get to Twilight Guardian without taking too much, having taken too much damage, and then that followed into, like, a Draconid operative, then, you know, it just swings around. It's just on top of them. So as long as you can deal with that, you know, the Frothing Berserker, I don't feel like people are playing it as much, because I'm not having to deal with it.
Some people have been cutting it, man.
Yeah,
so
it's like, really? It's a card that I laughed
at some people for telling me that I was an idiot for cutting it, because I've seen lists now that cut it, and they replace it. So they'll play, like, Dragon Pirate Warrior, right? We're going to go for, like, the hybrid mid-range aggro list that everybody tends to play. And for a while, Frothing Twice was an inclusion, double Fierce Monkey with Curator at the top end, and that was kind of your general shell. Now people are saying, you know what? I don't need Frothing. I don't need Fierce Monkey. Let me add in two Reapers, two upgrades, and sprinkle in another aggro tool in the mid game, like Blood Cell Cultist. It just gets with more and more weapon buffs in the Dragon Shell with the rest. But we're taking out Curator, so suddenly the pacing of the deck changes. Some people have been splashing Grom, and all of that is happening while Frothing goes away. It's still not the trend, though. I'd say that at the top level, people still value Frothing more than not, but it's been a discussion. I wouldn't say it's like a debate, because a debate would be framing it wrong. I would be saying it's a 50-50. No, it's not. It's still like very much like a 90-10, but there's a discussion about it.
Yeah.
And some people are just not liking it as much.
Yeah, I think it's more one of those things that people mulligan against the Frothing Berserker. So they'll keep things like, I don't know, whatever it is, Swipe, or they'll keep, you know, Fear Rage or I mean, I keep Shadow Word Pain, or even Shadow Word Death. I don't even feel bad. You know, if that thing gets to five easily, like very, very easily. So that ends up killing the Frothing Berserker a lot. And if they lose the Frothing Berserker, that's actually a bridge point for them. They need that card to live a turn. So if it doesn't live a turn, then I feel like the game flips halfway. It actually does flip halfway for you. And you're very much in the game at that point. So it's kind of interesting. But anyways, looking at this Reno Priest, I'll just kind of list it out. It's all the dragons that we all know. It's got the Mistress in the beginning, help out in a Potion of Madness to help out against early stuff. Got the Bran, of course, with the Cabal Courier and the Kazakus, just for all that awesome value. Let's see, what else does it have here? It's got a Ysera at the end, Chomal at the end. It's just, again, very heavy dragon. It's hard to actually have a lot of dragons so you can get a good percentage of getting those buffs and those up, you know, those added battle cries. So you really have to lace it with some of the top end dragons. And then let's see, what else is there that's kind of interesting? You know, like every time I play this card, sometimes I feel like I can't even be greedy enough with this deck, because I'm so used to double operatives and double historians.
Right, where you just get so much card draw. But that's one of the things so the big drawback of a typical Reno Priest is it doesn't have enough card draw. Yeah. You just struggle to keep yourself afloat. You don't see enough of the cards in your deck. You don't have any options. But when you're able to draw, you know, a card out of operative and a card out of Nether Spite, even in a Reno list, that's still very good, right?
Yeah,
like that's still a very powerful thing. So just the fact that they're getting pseudo card draw in the form of dragon related cards in a Reno Priest gives them a competitive deck, I think. Otherwise, I think that I much prefer playing the non-dragon deck, but the issue is card draw in that list. And I've played and I've tried it so much in so many ways. And every time I'm just like, if I could draw, you know, two or three more cards during the course of this game, I would probably be able to get somewhere, but I don't have it. And that's what Dragon Priest does better. And as a result of that, you know, top end, you don't even have to worry about your top end's going to be, right? You already have it figured out. So it takes out the headache out of the equation. So you don't have to worry about what you're going to be winning with. It's a very, I don't say self-building deck, but once you embrace the dragon theme in that deck, you just increase the deck, the card count by 10. You just go, all right, here are 10 cards I start with. Now I have to build. And it just helps you narrow down what you want.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice. I think that the Bran into Kazakus is a super important play this deck. Like, you have to get that because you never know what Draconet Operative gives you. A lot of times it gives you great things, but sometimes you never know, right? And same with Nether Spite Historian. You can semi whiff sometimes, but with Kazakus you don't whiff very often. It does something very powerful. Well, even if it's just blasting the face and removing the board, all those things are very useful at key times. And range for this deck is very, very important. And just haven't had a finish. So that was the main issue I had with the other Reno Priest. It's just like, I don't even know how to finish. Like the Zoth, I guess, or, I'm not even sure, what the best
there's
way.
You almost want to just put Ysera in Dragons, and then you realize, might as well play Dragon Reno Priest at that stage. You know, if I'm going to put in Nefarian and Ysera at the top end for card advantage, let me just play Dragon Priest.
Right. So. Yeah, so Spawn of Shadows, I think, is probably the best version of it. And that, you have to draw a lot of cards to pull that thing off. But it's fun as crap when you do. When you're just like, okay, I'm resetting my hero power again with another card and resetting it again and another card, and it's actually a funny combo. But and that's the one thing that's very cool about the Priest right now. You can do these these cool gimmicky things with Beardo or Spawn of Shadows and whatchamacallit, Shadow Form, and you know, all those cards that literally reset your hero power so that you can use it again. It's fun. There's definitely OTK possibilities, and down the road, if there does come a way that priests can draw cards, maybe 33% better than they can draw cards right now.
A tiny bit more, just a little bit more.
It could be something real there, which would be kind of cool. Okay, well, why don't we stay on the priest, and let's talk about this confused priest that you have.
It's not a confused priest anymore.
It's the inner fire priest.
It's going to be a... like a throwback to your first day in Hearthstone, where you looked at all the cards that existed and you thought, what can I make out of this, you know, free to play roster of cards? And you looked at Divine Spirit, you probably found an Inner Fire somewhere in a pack, and you're like, this is it. This is the deck that's going to beat everyone. You slap in a rare Light Well that you craft for 100 dust, and you just go to town on people at rank 20. And eventually Iron Beak Owl came out, and you realized that won't work.
Yeah.
Well, my kid's crying in the background.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
Sounds like he's dying right now. All right, so the deck is very much about the drawing cards and finding the combo. I think one of the big reasons this deck came up as a natural, something I wanted to return to is because we got Hosen Healer and Cabal Talon Priest. And Cabal Talon Priest is a power shield on legs, right? It's just like 3 mana, give +3 health to something. And you can use that extra health to not only draw cards with Northshire, keep your minion healed up with Circle of Healing, trade on the board nicely to give yourself extra survivability. But in the worst case scenario, it's a Dark Cultist. It just comes out on the board as a 3-mana 3-4 or a spider tank, rather, and it just does its own thing. And one of the fantastic things about the deck is that because you play Hosen Healer, you have a 2-6 there that when combined with Aucanized Soul Priest lets you kill anything. There's a Ragnaros on the board. You go Aucanized Soul Priest into Hosen Healer, and you deal all the damage, you know, the Dominion has in health to it. So if Dominion has 8 health, it takes 8. You restore it to full health, you kill it. It's kind of like renoing yourself with Aucanized on the board, except onto a minion. So suddenly you don't need Flash Heal, or at least you don't feel like you need them as much. And you can spend your other cards onto stuff like Loot Hoarder to cycle faster, Acolyte of Pain to draw into the combo quicker. Mm-hmm. Now, whether this deck is optimized or not is probably another question. I don't think I've optimized the list. I think there is a lot of merit to including, say, a one of Embrace the Shadows with maybe the Flash Heal somewhere in there. But then I want to go for, you know, Prophet Velen, and how deep do I want to go down that hole before I go back in? It's not the same deck, but it's been great fun.
Yeah.
For now, I've stagnated with this deck. I'm rocking a 50 to 55% win rate at like rank 8. So it's not good, but it certainly is a deck you can play up to there and have a decent amount of fun with.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like a lot of aspects of it. I mean, the removal is that, you know, the removal from Priest has always been one of the strongest things. I think it's really hard though to keep some of those minions alive. Like it would be cool if you would have, yeah, to be honest, just some of the dragons, like any of the 2/4s.
I know, right?
You know? And then the one, it always leads back to dragons for priests. It's kind of funny.
It's kind of annoying, honestly. That's what annoyed me when I was building it, but sure.
Yeah. So, but I do like Hosen Healer. Like, if it wasn't such an aggro, like, if the aggro meta wasn't such a, strong thing right now, so popular right now, I think we might see some more Hosen Healers. Like if Druid became like the most powerful deck right now, you know, the Kun Druid or the, you know, any of the Druids that have large minions, then we could, you know, that I think the Hosen Healer would have a lot more effect, because the removal is the power of that card. It's not the heal itself. It's actually the removal, because they're
the removal part.
It's very rare that you want to heal a minion up to full health.
I'll say something though. There's I tried a variant of this with Fel Auric Soul Fiend, the 3-mana 3/7 that healed, that damages itself.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I tried that with the injured Blade Master, right? Like in the typical priest fashion.
Oh yeah,
and
right.
Hosen Healer actually did amazing work it came down on turn 4. But
yeah,
like, what do I do in my 3 drops? Do I cut the Talon Priest? That sounds inane. Do I cut Acolytes? Where's my card draw for the combo play at that stage?
Right.
So it became more of a Tempo Priest, but a Tempo Priest is better served with dragons. So why go with this route?
Exactly.
It always goes back to the dragons.
I do want to say one thing. Well, actually, just kind of finishing off this deck, there's Circle of Healings, there's Inner Fires, there's Divine Spirits. Just for removal, there's some Pint-Sized Potion, Potion of Madness, and and Wild Pyromancer, Acolyte of Pain, and Loot Hoarder for draw. One Doomsayer. So a lot of removal, and then you're just going for that combo. I did want to say one thing about Inner Fire, because I actually think that Inner Fire is... like, we look at it too much in the from the standpoint of OTK, but that card is actually, similar to plus three attack, but potentially better. You know what I mean? Like, but even if we use it as a plus three attack right now, on the priest cards, that's actually really good. You know, like, if we, not maybe plus three, maybe it's plus two, plus three, somewhere in there. But if you make, like, a Northstar Cleric 3-3, or let's say you just buff it with a powered shield and then inner fire it, even at a 5-5, that's really strong. You know, that's like putting a 4-4 Edwin Van Cleef down, you know, like on turn two or something like that. And you might blow through some cards, but that particular play, you can actually recover cards and keep board, right? While you're trying to get to, you know, if it's a dragon deck, you're trying to get to turn four and turn five in dragon decks. So the inner fire tool, it has a lot of utility in very subtle ways too. It's just nobody ever uses it in that subtle way.
This deck kind of does, right? With Hose and Healer, like,
yeah, sure.
I rarely get the OTK actually. I've only gotten it once. Usually it's like I have this 2-6 and this 3-5 and this, 3-4 on the board, and this is my board. And then I inner fire one of them and keep stuff alive somehow. And that's the way we end up winning. So I agree with you. I think that card is largely undervalued as a straight up damage tool. And it's also, it can be used to do gimmicky stuff, right? Where you go like Pint-Sized Potion with Potion of Madness, Inner Fire, and then you restore the attack of the minion to smash into something. You can use the Inner Fire as a way to enable Shadow Ward Death on a minion that's like, the minion is like a 3-8. You're like, I need to kill this right now. Or Ysera. Ysera's out. You just go Inner Fire Death. And otherwise you had no answer. There are some cases where you can use that as a removal tool, a removal setup.
Inner Fire is, it's one of those spells that it's just not used, even though it has such great versatility. And Priest is full of cards like that. I've been wanting to use Power Word Glory forever. You know, like actually just shutting down some kind of aggro decks. Some super powerful card, but I can never fit it in. It sucks. It's like, God, I want to fit it in. And then when I play it, and I play like Wild Pyro, for instance, right? Just have some synergy with it. It just died. They just crashed that exact minion into my Wild Pyro. So it's just like, come on, man.
Feels that bad, sucks. Man.
Exactly, right? So there are a lot of cool cards like that with Priest. It's just a matter of making them all gel together somehow. And they're starting to do it. You're starting to see, Priest of the Feast and things like that. So it's I think eventually we'll get there, and you'll be able to unlock 90% of the priests. It's kind of like the brain, the human brain,
Yeah. The priest. It's the only brain. Only 10% of priests use their brain. Oh wait, that's not what I meant. As far as priests go, I think there are a lot of fun decks to experiment with and discover out there with, there are many ways to the OTK. There's the whole Confusion or Fire shenanigan. There's the Mind Blast Velen, or the Flash Heal. There's the Auction Master Beardo, Raza, the Chain, like so Infinite Spawn awesome of Shadows. Things. And the thing is, like, even if these decks may not be heavy, powerhouses or juggernauts in the meta, there are still decks you can play to enjoy Hearthstone, because at its core, I think Hearthstone is very much about those fun decks and not so much about getting to Legend. I mean, for me, at the very least, I think that goal is something that it's already been attained. Past. It's not something that keeps me alive, and it doesn't keep my love with the game going. To me, it's all about these interactions, and Priest is probably the best class for that.
Yeah, to make plays... Priest is the class for that, and it's a lot of fun. Okay, well, why don't we move on to... all right, you got Murloc Shaman. Like, come on, we've all played the Murloc Shaman to finish the Murloc. To finish the Murloc deck, we've all done it. So I've had my share of it, too. So I kind of want to see this, man.
Well, I didn't go half... I didn't half measure it. So this is one of three iterations that I had, okay?
Okay,
this is...
Right.
the all-in Murloc list. Double Tiny Fin, Oracle, Double Tidecaller, Finley, Double Blowgill Sniper, which is amazing against Pirates. Mm-hmm. Let no one tell you otherwise. Double Bluegill with Flame Tongue works very well. Double Tidehunter, Cold Light Oracle as a one of. And of course, the War Leader, Cold Light Seer, Finja. And every Fin is awesome in a Bloodlust. So we have two of every Fin and one Bloodlust with the double call in the finishers to make sure that we have a full board. So the goal of the deck is really to create this scenario where you're constantly, you know, refilling the board, because a board with, say, Murloc Tidehunter and another Murloc, right? Like, we're talking two, you play two cards, and the opponent often has to use something like Maelstrom Portal or Demon Wrath for fear that you have like a Flame Tongue Totem and more damage output. Mm-hmm. And then you get in call in the finishers, and suddenly they have another wave of Murlocs to worry about.
Yeah.
And then that means everything is awesome, costs only three on turn five. So they're worried about that at that stage. So what I think is fascinating about the Murloc deck, even though this may not be the best deck or the best list out there for sure, is you have a few Murlocs, not many of them, that cost as much as they reduce the cost of everything is awesome. So everything is awesome, when you play a one cost Murloc, costs you one less. So effectively, that Grimmskull Oracle was, you know, it's a 3-mana 1-1, a 3-mana 3-3, 1-mana 3-3, sorry, that allowed you to play every Fin on top of it. Now, when you slap in call in the finishers, you get four Murlocs for 4-mana. That's true as well. It essentially ramps up every Fin just as fast as it puts out Murlocs. But the only card that does, like, a net gain is the Tiny Fin. For 0-mana, you get a Murloc, and it's giving you a coin. For every Fin is awesome because it reduces its cost by one. So if you set up the right board, so you go Finja on turn five, you kill something, you bring out two Murlocs, now you have three. You play if calling the finishers, now you have seven. Yeah. Every Fin is awesome is free. So with Finja, every Fin is awesome is kind of an automatic segue after calling the finisher. So they've created this pocket of self-contained combo and shaman to make every Fin is awesome good in the expansion. And I feel like it's underappreciated because they went out of their way to make call in the finishers be exactly four Murlocs, because Finja gave you a net three Murlocs at the end of the day. It's so awesome. I just love that Blizzard did that.
It's every Fin is awesome.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think that certain aspects of this deck feel like the Evolve deck. You know, like, because the call of the call in the finishers with anything is awesome. Basically makes you 4-3-3s, guys. I mean, that's not easy to remove. It's much more removable. It's much more removable than the Doppelganger Evolve, but it is a two card play that fills the board that gives you a Bloodlust finish, like a threat to finish, which is like a 24 damage hit. So, you know, when I was winning games with it, I was winning that way. I even played a deck where I just dropped all the other Murlocs.
Just won anyway.
I dropped all the other Murlocs and just played the, you know, Call of the Finishers and just with other stuff. Like, almost like the Evolve deck without Evolve, you know, and Doppelganger. Yeah. And it functioned pretty similar. But I do have to say that it's, you know, Finja is pretty fun to play. I think Finch is still the best when you only limited it to Bluegills and the War Leaders, because those are the two that don't have battle cries for one. And, you know, those are the ones that, you know, War Leader itself affects Finja's ability to survive too. So Finja can actually remove something significant and, not significant, but can do damage or, you know, just take whatever more than four damage.
How would you feel if Cold Light Seer was, you know, an aura effect instead of...
Oh yeah, the aura effect would be a million times better.
Cold Light Seer feels like it's the glue that holds Murloc together, but it's so expensive. Like, if it were a 1-mana 1-2 that gave them all plus one health, it would be better, right? Like, because it's just... It's just more usable. Right now, it's one of those cards that does something really awesome for the deck, but it's too costly to weave in after like a board flood of Murlocs. And it's just a little bit short of, I think, making it work. I feel like maybe if Finja made the Murlocs trigger their battle cries, you know, what if it read, you know, you bring them out and they trigger their battle cries. Now suddenly we have something. Like, the Tidehunter spawns more stuff. Cold Light draws you cards. Cold Light Seer buffs your Murlocs. Now you've got this crazy power.
Then you've got a broken deck is what you got.
I don't know, man. Pirates are really...
Pirates,
like,
they get that edge in the beginning. Yeah. But you're talking about this deck. This deck would, you know, just get momentum very quickly on turns three and four. And
but they've only got Finja, right? They've only got Finja as a one of. They would need another like really good legendary for the archetype to be pushed into like overpowered territory, I think.
But Aura is definitely the right way to go, though, because the weakness to the Bluegill on purpose is the one health. Everything has one health. Like almost like literally like 14 cards here have like one health. And if you could just make it two health, like if this deck was in, can you imagine a shaman had the grindy, you know, whatever, smuggler's crate or whatever? Oh my God. You know, I don't know why it doesn't work in Paladin, you know, sometimes.
But I know, right? It feels like it should.
It's like it totally should, but it doesn't like consistently. So,
Bloodlust.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, Paladins don't have Bloodlust. That's the difference. Like they can buff them up and make the Murlocs live longer, but they can't finish like very very quickly. Like Shaman, you just literally make it last one turn, and you can win games instantly. So this deck is not like top tier or even tier three or any or four, maybe not even tier four.
No, nothing like that. But it's like the bottom of the barrel like deck.
It's not though. It's not. I don't see that. What I was trying to get at is like I don't think it's actually that bad, like tarot bad. This is actually a card a deck you can get wins off of, like in, you know, rank 10 and you know, maybe a little bit higher. You can surprise people too. It's a typical Murloc deck. You got to draw right. If you draw right, you get your curve, then you always got a good chance. It's tough against pirates.
I mean, I've tried weapons. Some hybrid lists, right, where I cut like the Urimscale Oracle, I cut out the tiny fins, and I play Tunnel Trog, Totem Golem, Feral Spirit, Maelstrom Portal. Even in the Murloc shell, that works. Like that just worked naturally because it should. But at that point, like it's a Murloc deck because it has Murlocs, but it's not all in on the theme. So there are ways to go like halfway and still make a Murloc deck happen. But it's getting carried really hard by the Trog, the Golem, and you know the quote-unquote overpowered shaman tools that they've had for a long time, which are way ahead of the curve in terms of power. So
card draw is an issue too with this deck. There's so much many cheap cards, so it's
oh yeah tough. Initially I had a Genzo in there instead of Bloodlust, and then I realized I need the finisher, but I think there could still be room for you to, you know, cut something and put in the Genzo.
Genzo,
it's another cold light basically.
It's pretty cool. I mean, wait, you only draw if you have no cards, right?
And no, it's if you have less than three, you go up to three. Right, but most decks in the meta always have like more than three, so it oftentimes doesn't affect them as much.
I'd rather have Jeeves, man. Yourself. Bring back Jeeves.
I know.
The Jeeves was so much better than that card.
But I like Genzo. I think it's a cool card conceptually.
It's definitely interesting. The fact that he's stealth. Let's talk about a good deck. Let's break out at least one good deck during this, which is at least, you know, maybe top three or top two tier deck. And that's the Egg Druid. And we actually saw the Egg Druid in the show match that we did last week with Firebat and RDU, where Firebat totally mind gamed RDU at the very end in the Druid versus Druid matchup. And, you know, I think he banned, what did he ban? He banned obviously Innervate, and I think he banned he banned Mulch. So totally like showing something where he was gonna bring something big. And then he went the opposite and went with the Egg Druid. So RDU banned Innervate and Jade Idol. So
which are not even in
completely
here.
Whiffed, and this deck is like, you know, it was as pure as you get, so he ran him over basically. But this deck is a Jackie Chan deck. And have you played this deck? This deck is so fun.
I mean, I'm looking at the list now, and I've played my own homebrewed version, which actually ran patches with Bloodsail Corsairs,
right?
Because they're better living roots basically.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. For those of you that are listening, it's how many cards is this? 16 cards? I think it's 16 cards. So it's all doubles and a couple singletons. Argent Squire, Dragon Egg, Enchanted Raven, Living Root, Mark of the Lotus, Runic Egg, Sir Finley, Druid of the Saber, Lance Carrier, Mark of the Wild, Mark of Yasharge, Power of the Wild, Mounted Raptor, Savage Roar, Defender of Argus, and Soul of the Forest. And the whole point of this is to get off to a quick start. It could be the eggs. Sometimes it's just literally Enchanted Raven on something, which can be really good. But if you can get you can get minions on the board to stick, then you run like Mark of the Lotus on it, and then you just get to Soul of the Forest. And then once you get to Soul of the Forest, it's just like, it's pretty much, a lot of times it's just over after that, because the stickiness of your board is gives you so much time to draw, you know, Argus or Savage Roar or Power of the Wild, all of these things. Mark of the Wild is even a pain in the ass, dude, to have to deal with. It just ends up snowballing on you, and you know, a lot of times you just barely lose, but you lose, you know, very consistently.
Yeah,
you lose to it, and it's good. I was like,
it's really tough to stop, though. Once it gets the ball rolling, that deck just does degenerate things. It's really quick to get you, you know, low on health and just pressure you. Yeah. But it's also very quick to simply running out of stuff. Like, that's the big drawback of the deck. But that's true of most aggro decks. And this is one of the pure aggro decks. Like, it doesn't try to disguise itself as something else. It just goes... Actually, it's the purest form of token deck.
Yeah.
Where it just, like, floods the board, buffs it, and it says, if this board is gone... I'm dead, so fuck it. This is my shot. And they just go in. And
yeah.
It's really cool to see.
Exactly. It's good to see this type of archetype. And I mean, it's just awesome to have that, give your opponent the dilemma right off the bat. You play like Dragon Egg. What are you going to do?
Wait, what? Yeah,
are you
exactly.
Are you going to spend and kill it and leave my 2-1, which like everybody doesn't want to do, but it's actually the right play, I think, in a lot of times where you just remove the egg. Because the egg ends up getting them 2 whelps a lot of times, and that's when it snowballs out of control for them. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's like you have to take inefficient plays in the beginning just to deal with this deck in the future. But really, really fun. You guys should give it a try if you guys are running into a lot of pirate deck. This is great against pirates. As long as you get an Argus or just one of these taunts, right? Mark of the Wild but normally the eggs, they won't touch the eggs, right? And then the eggs are just basically the way to flood the board over them. And they have,
well, you can force them to touch the egg, right? With Mark of the Wild, I think that's where you get them into a really awkward spot. Like between Mark of the Lotus, Power of the Wild, Mark of the Wild, Mark of Yasharge, there's a lot of spots where they're just like, oh, I can't ignore this egg. It's going to get value trades, spawn stuff.
Yeah.
And put me on the back foot. So it's a beautiful deck.
And it's like, guys, with a coin, I think people forget how powerful Enchanted Raven into Mark of Yasharge is.
Yeah.
Mark of Yasharge is. It's just like, it's incredibly strong, you know, and it's like a 2-turn and you draw a card too. And then on top of that, you can like Mark of the Wild. I mean, you can Mark of the Wild the Enchanted Raven too, and it's like crazy strong. So the first 2 turns for this deck are ones that can rival the pirate, which is surprising. But if you can get any kind of momentum early on against pirates, you just win. So that's why this deck does so well.
I mean,
well,
the taunts are just so good at stopping them. They're so small, and they're stopping huge weapons and Corcoran elites. It just feels bad for the pirates.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really bad against the decks that have AoE, like Reno Lock and like Shaman in the mid-range area. Like those will just wreck you very often. They're flame top totems. It's just like, it feels bad. But against a big chunk of the meta that doesn't have the AoE, that's hyper aggro, that can work pretty well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, well, I mean, I think those are the decks that we had for today. Again, you guys that might not be able to see it, you know, or didn't relay enough of the cards, you guys can always find the show notes on chamanb.tv. I always post just all the show information, links to the VODs, the audio links and everything. You can find them there. And, you know, we have links to the decks there too. But wanted to give a... quick shout out to the iTunes folks, a lot of the folks that listen to Valuetown and find us through the, you know, just iTunes and the Hearthstone section. Leaving a 5-star review, leaving a nice comment helps a lot. That helps the SEO a lot in that section. So if you do listen to the show via, you know, that route, iTunes, please go in there and leave a 5-star review if you haven't, because it would be awesome if you did. I do want to give a few shout outs to a couple people that have. Adam Alter and Love Me Some Politics. Yes, we do, especially in the U.S. these days, I think.
Yes, I mean, you've had your fair share of it, so I'm going to let that rest.
Exactly.
I'm going to let it rest.
We've had too much politics, holy crap. But yeah, thanks a lot for leaving that review and just some of the nice words that you've left there. It's awesome. Also, our patrons our awesome patrons who are the ones that support the show. Valleytown is 100% supported by the Patreon that we have. And we're up to 87 patrons now, which is so amazing and unbelievable, given that 2 months ago we had half of that, maybe even less than half of that.
Less than half for sure. We had such incredible support from you guys over the past month and a half, 2 months even. It's been amazing. And of course, that's a continued effort. So we're at 87. Yeah. We can definitely get to 100 at some point. So if anybody is watching this and wants to participate in supporting the show, feel free to do so. Just hop on a Patreon, pledge a little bit of support, and you'll be shouted out to occasionally. Plus, we also have a crazy good segment coming right up as a result of that Patreon, I believe, right?
Yes. Milestone is coming up right after we give a shout out to a few of our patrons.
Sure.
Big thanks to our legend producers, Mike T and Louis G, as always. And then a few other patrons that, you know, have been generous enough to pledge and support us. Johnson C, Davin P, Devin W, David G, James R, Vince F, Thomas O, Michael O, Lance B, Daniel F, and Eugene L. I feel like I'm going through baby names and trying to figure out what I should name my next child, but you guys are definitely on that list and amazing. big thanks to you guys. And again, like, we're able to do this show in 2017, and because of that, we've, you know, continued to reach that milestone that we have there, and looking forward to having some awesome shows, particularly in January here. But now, yes,
now
it's time. Now it's time. I wasn't completely prepared. Oh no! Hold on! Hold on a
You'll
second.
You'll be fine, Shaman. Yeah,
kill time. Kill time.
Okay, so you have to rub your cheek muscles and everything just to make sure that that's very relaxed. We've got a Milestone segment when we're gonna not awkwardly stare at the camera for as long as we can humanly bear to do so. As a thank you to all the people who pledged on Patreon and made us smile the day that it happened.
Alright, here we go.
Is that the way this works?
Yes, that is the way they're here. The
count music it down, started. Shanman.
The music started. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That music. I don't think Noxious should hear the music, but I should make it so he can hear it. Okay. All right. Nice. Ooh. You guys enjoyed
that? Was a good
oh
run.
My gosh. Yeah, that was a good run.
That's enough for the day.
That's enough for the day. Exactly. Enough. But yeah, thanks a lot again for folks for the Patreon. And, you know, we're going to keep doing Milestone as long as we keep it there. And we got another milestone too, which is, I believe, making some Hearthstone voice lines. Like, we'll make some voice lines for you guys that you can use on your phone and you know, creep people out with our voices. So you can try that out. Okay, well, next up, did you want to do your wish list thing, or did you want to do Mechatorps next?
I guess it's an important topic. It's a list of topics that I'd like to tackle. You know, we had Ixar actually on Reddit or on Twitter, sorry, send out a call to people and say, you know, what do you guys want to see out of Hearthstone for 2017? And I think we should maybe get some topics in. I'll take my most, the ones I thought were the most important. Of course, there's tournament mode. I won't even talk about that. We've already discussed this issue to death. Tournament mode would be good. I would like to see, you know, spectator mode being fixed. We've already tackled that. So those are kind of the side issues. They're very important, but they're not novel in any way. I think one of the big focuses for 2017 should be the social aspect of Hearthstone. Right now, when you log into Hearthstone, your only social interaction is either 6 pre-made emotes for your character or your friend list and the chat that you have, which incidentally is frustrating to use because it's so invasive. I mean, I personally dislike chatting to someone on the Battle.net client or in Hearthstone, that is, because my game is hidden. Everything, every menu UI option is hidden. I can't see anything but the chat. So I think the in-game social experience is pretty bad. And I think we are due for guilds. We are due for a guild system where we can create a guild, invite people in, and have a chat room to talk to them between games, like a lobby to which we're returned to talk with friends that maybe we just would like to talk to in group as group. Opposed to just being a one to one thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's so much you can do with a guild system. Guild achievements. All right, did everybody play, 10 Moonfires today? Whatever the fucking case may be. Is there a month quest or a guild quest that says play 100,000 Moonfires? And that's like a long-term goal. And everyone in the guild who ever plays Moonfire contributes one cast to that experience bar. And at the end of it, we unlock a special Moonfire for everybody in the guild. Like, just one of those really cool things that you could make happen with a guild system. Achievements, rewards, if you have a guild event, you could have 2v2 mode, if that's ever a thing, where you can do that. Maybe a tavern brawl with a guild mate as a quest, a guild quest. So it adds another roster of quests on top of the three original ones we've got. I personally would love to have guilds in Hearthstone.
Okay, yeah, I think that's an excellent idea. I mean, we already kind of do those sort of things via Skype and just like the social aspect. I mean, people do co-ops all the time. We're using Skype and all this audio. We actually have voice chat now on Battle.net. Like, we might as well use it in Hearthstone, and figure out a way where we can have more of a co-op experience. I know they don't want to promote that, like, necessarily on the highest of the ladder, and have that sort of thing. But from the standpoint of a casual Hearthstone, that is an excellent feature to have. To be able to share an experience and play together, co-op Hearthstone is good. It doesn't have to be PvE or anything like that. It can just be literally just playing together against somebody. Yeah. For me, I'm looking at even just simpler things, and I've said it before, and I wish they would just do it, because I don't feel like it's that hard of a thing to do. Keep all of us that are, quote unquote, done with doing everything in the game, like,
engaged.
Yeah, keep us engaged. Give us more levels to achieve with the classes. I mean, that is like literally just ticking up a number, like that's the max levels for each of the classes. Like, why don't you just raise those and make us feel like we're achieving something every time we're finishing games too, on top of, climbing ladder. Because it's those little things. It's those little things that make it a little bit less frustrating mentally, when we're playing Hearthstone. It's like, oh God, man, fucking lost again, shit. But if you're giving me something in terms, whether it's XP or whatever it is on top of that, then it feels a little bit better. Another thing too, let's go beyond gold cards and let's get some platinum cards and some cool shit like that that we can get excited about whenever we get just the same cards. A new frame.
Top. How about we could unlock that somehow?
That's
another criticism I've got, and the single player progression is in there.
Yeah.
Like, we just kind of don't have any.
Yeah. There's nothing to keep the, individually being motivated to play the game outside of the quest for gold, which is like future efficiency in terms of buying packs and playing arena, whatever it is. And just ranking up a ladder, it's like, look at all these other games. I mean, please. I mean, there's been tons. I mean, I used to make mobile games. And mobile games are a perfect example. There's all these freaking mind game achievement things that, it's like, I'm happy to have Hearthstone just do that to me. Just do those mental manipulations to me to keep me playing.
Well, they're progression paths, really. Like, what we're asking for, basically, is... So we've got these progression paths that are obvious. The ladder system, rank up, get chests, complete collection. Yeah. The collection is actually a progression path. Like, it's not a path, but it's something you're progressing towards, getting a full collection. Gold cards are another layer of that. The ranks that you get, the arena runs, and how good you are at them. But ultimately, like, the vanity progression only exists in Golden Heroes right now and Golden Basic cards, right? Yeah. That's exactly what we've got for vanity, that and paying $10 for a JPEG. But
that's pretty much, yeah, a couple sounds
because you can't really get those things from gold, right? So it's not really a progression path as much as a cosmetic microtransaction. But when I look at progression, I'm thinking an achievement. I've talked about this
new emote for achievement.
Like, give me an achievement that reads, during the period of the Halloween period, if I do some deck or another, if I play like 1,000 in Death Rattle minions during the Halloween season, whatever the name of that, Hallow's End, I think it's called in WoW. Whenever I do that during that period, then give me the ability to have like a pumpkin hat on my character, or a pumpkin showing up on the board instead of little reddish, right? Like, just give me something that I can work towards that is not a quest, because quests in the way that they're made daily, or like, we already have sort of achievements, and you know, the first time you do X, get something, you know, reach 1,000 wins, mm-hmm. get something, unlock all the heroes, get a pack. Like, those are quote unquote achievements, but they're really just quests that help you progress, but there's no vanity that comes out of it. It's all actually about your cars and your collection, and that's it. That's all it's helping you do. And it gets kind of old.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that might, like, it would be cool if an achievement like gave you a new emote or something like that. And I mean, even if it doesn't mean, you know, changing the UI, because I know the UI is like one of the biggest things that takes the longest to change, as we know with just the number of decks, right? The deck slots took us years, you know, to finally get. So if we're keeping the UI as similar as possible, then it'd be nice to even just get a different wow, like an emote, given an achievement, or, you know, just something.
Get sorry back.
Yeah, well, something that signifies that you've played a ton of this game. Yeah. You know, that not just a little bit, you know, like you're a new player that's, I don't know, done some iPhone or some Apple promo and gotten something like that. You know, it's something that where you've achieved like a level 100 in a shaman or something like that. I think it'd be nice to add some of those vanity things to Hearthstone we're missing. Mm-hmm.
Have you played Eternal, the trading card game online? I mean, the CCG, not trading, sorry.
No, I haven't.
Okay, because they have this thing in the profile menu that where you can actually change your emotes. You can choose what your greeting is going to say. You can choose what your thanks is going to say. Mm-hmm. When you start the game, is that when you hit the little button where greetings is usually, you know, located, you get to pick between five things. One of them can be let's go, or happy to see you here, you can choose the one you want.
Right.
And it's like a wheel. We don't have this.
Yeah.
But also, like, I feel like Blizzard would have had to record a bunch of voice packages. But I mean, is that really, but I was going to say, is that really something they haven't done? Is that something, I can't believe they've only made greetings friend for, you know, shaman. Like, there's no way. The guy who was in the voice box probably said 100 different lines that came off the top of his head.
All I know,
like,
is,
that's the way it's done.
All I know is Matt Mercer, you know, he does Rexxar. I mean, he's freaking done all the McCree voice lines. Okay. For Overwatch. I think they can manage like getting more voices done for these heroes.
You know, don't really speak about the Overwatch.
I'm just
team.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, voice lines. I don't think voice lines is an issue. So,
I agree.
But yeah, I think those would be cool. In terms of gameplay, I don't know. I think there's the
arena.
Arena. Okay.
I would like arena to be slightly revamped or at least expanded upon. I don't mind arena in its current state.
Yeah.
I would love to see, of course, golden heroes and golden cards. You know, if you get 12 wins with the deck, then by virtue of whatever, every single card in your deck would henceforth be drafted as golden. So if you ever reach 12 wins, it's a good status for you to have. But what I would like to see the most done is, if not an overhaul, then an inclusion of a new mode called the Colosseum. You get to pick 45 cards. And you build a 30-card deck out of them. Instead of picking 30 cards and having a 30-card deck, you either make the arena be 45 and then deck build down to 30, or you go ahead and make it so Colosseum is a new mode that's less
like
obvious
that.
Or more for more advanced players of the drafting, you know, gameplay. I like game modes, and I think Hearthstone needs to have more of them in the future.
Yeah, I like it too. I think game modes, though, are one of the things that take the longest for them to actually do. So, not holding my breath, I guess I had to say on those. So I'm just trying to figure out things that are like, you know, low hanging fruits for them, you know, that they can, you know, they can pull off without too many resources, or at least what I think of as that would be expensive. I think outside of that, I'm happy with the game. I mean, I might be different than a lot of folks, but there are a lot of people that still love Hearthstone, and I definitely am in that bucket. I don't think it needs too much to really push the casual side of things. And you know, I'm somewhere between casual and like the ultra competitive person at this point. Because tournament mode would be great. I think tournament mode would be great, but you know, at the same time, I'm okay with ladder 2 right now.
Yeah.
So it's You know, I don't know what XR was looking for exactly. You know, I wish it would be a little bit more specific, you know, as to
I think
how
it's
much
very broad. It's a very it's like a wide net they're casting and hoping to get any type of feedback.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of these things we've already talked about too, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I don't want to necessarily rehash all the things that we've said, but yeah, but wish list, I definitely want to see new stuff that, you know, not just cards, you know, new facets to
easy.
The actual, you know,
it's too easy to make cards.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, truthfully, it is like the easiest part. Like, I feel like the easiest part of designing a card game is coming up with cards. It's the rest that's tough. And that's what we want more of, because you've proven you can deliver cards. Like, we know that. Like, we've gotten it now. You have a schedule. You give us like a few hundred cards every year. And we're like, okay, they know how to make cards. And then the question is, how can they implement their effects in game, the engineering behind every card?
Yeah.
But our question is, what else do we get to do in this game aside from the same game mode every single day, in and out, with no big variation on it? Like, we don't get a daily tavern brawl. We get a weekly tavern brawl, and then there's 2 days is down. So it feels like the amount of variance or variability of my gameplay isn't, you know, crazy big. Mm-hmm. And I think it's even worse for newer players who don't have, you know, Lorewalker Chote to fuck around with, or Mayor Noggin Fogger to fuck around with. Like, they just don't have all those cards. And I don't know. I feel like the between all those, those points they could expand on, there's got to be something that everybody can agree on. And I feel like at least the social aspect is a big one.
Oh, one thing I did forget is, and one thing I'd love to have is just personal stats. I think it would be awesome just to be able to see, I mean, even high level stuff, very, very high level. Right now, all we see are wins in constructed or wins in arena. That's like literally all we see. And like, if there was, you know, any additional high, you know, high global kind of numbers, or maybe a little bit of granularity, how many wins I actually have in each class, or you know, what my winning percentage is, you know, just things like that. I think that would be really, really great, just to have a profile that actually gives me some of those stats. Completely new UI, so you don't have to change the existing UI. Just build a new one, so it's literally, you know, action, click on this, and then you can start like
buttons,
a completely new thing. Yeah. I mean, all the mobile users might get pissed off that it's like even bigger now. Oh my god, now I got to download another update that's like even freaking bigger now. But you know, like I think so they'll be okay if, you know, if they get something added that's actually new. But
I will
say one thing, like to
though,
see that.
I would like Blizzard to dissociate the development of PC and mobile a bit more. I understand they don't want to give PC users options or features that mobile users don't get, because mobile is such a huge part of their market.
Yeah, true.
But I think there are things that are just harder to do on mobile, right? Like the giving a tournament platform, right? Like an application you have to register to then play on a tournament, for instance, that's external to the client. That is probably a bit harder to do on mobile. I'm sure it's doable, but you know, on a phone, maybe not so much. On a tablet, maybe a bit easier.
Same thing.
As a result, is the same thing like from the back end. But as far as playing the game, I feel like it's a lot tougher to, you know, do a tournament mode, scroll between windows on a phone for the user, not for the developers. That's an irrelevant thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe giving features that require more bulky UI space to PC users, or configuring the aesthetic of it differently based on the platform is, I mean, it would be nice. Just to have like bigger elements on PC. They've already done it, but I think it's not pushed enough. Like the differences are minor at best.
Yeah, I hear you. Even I think you know, even replays I think would be nice too. If we had, I mean, that's now we're starting to reach like way beyond. But a replay system I think would be nice, just to you know, one thing I think a lot of Hearthstone players aren't able to do is replay just what their games were, and you really be able to look at what your mistakes are. Like, I'm sure your average Hearthstone players makes the same mistake over and over and over, and I think being able to look at your replays and seeing how like a certain play on turn 5 ended up resulting in turn 9, you know, some you know, the board, how it resulted in a couple turns or 3 or 4 turns afterwards, is a good way for folks just to learn how to get better. And it's actually a good way for, even if you do want coaching in Hearthstone, for folks to be able to do that with you. Because I think the most inefficient way to coach in Hearthstone is to coach a live game.
A live game, yeah. It's almost never good.
It's not good because you're not fixing problems in a very efficient manner. You're just like on the fly seeing if he makes if he has an issue or not at that given moment.
There's no analysis. You can't pause and then analyze the play. You have to tell them what to do or correct the issue, and then they move on and they're like, I don't remember that lesson now. Because it was too quick. The games go by very fast.
So, to be fair, you can just record yourself like on video, but it'd be nice to have the ability to do it in game because it's there. You know, there are like emulators that people have made that just use the script that, from the log file or, just the script file. And then it just recreates the actual game in an emulator, just something that looks uglier than the actual game itself. Yeah. So, given we have the spectator mode, I don't know if the spectator mode is used in the same way or if it's actually, I don't think it pulls from the actual, view of the games. I'm getting like technical talk here, but if it just, it just uses the client to recreate what, the script is anyways. So I think a replay probably functions in a similar fashion, but it'd be cool if we could get that. Is all I'm trying to say.
Anyways,
if you guys have any other cool things to really suggest, go ahead and email those right now to valuetown@chainmanv.tv and we'll take a look at them during the Q&A section. Why don't we move on to Mechatork's Workshop, where we talk about our own custom cards we come up with, or at least some of our viewers and fans and patrons come up with. And this is just like a suggestion to Blizzard as to maybe some of the cool text and features that maybe they can try using. All right, here we go. We've got something from... Actually, we got a couple from Cruxor, who I know is in the chat, waiting eagerly to see if we actually bring up his cards. But we are going to bring up his cards. So the first one is a Banshee Queen. And the second one, if you notice the name,
is actually himself. The cold-blooded.
Himself, man.
It's Cruxor. We haven't had that happen yet,
so we gotta give him some credit for naming it, creating a card with his own namesake. That's a first that we've had on Value Talent. But let's talk about this card. 5 mana, 6/3 legendary Cruxor, the Cold-Blooded. Battle Cry and Death Rattle freeze all enemy minions. Okay, so kind of like a Frost Nova. And then when you get on the board, and a Frost Nova when you leave the board.
It's exactly Aya Blackpaw in a way, right? Like in terms of the way that it does something after when it comes in, comes out. The thing that this minion does is it requires your opponent to use removal on it if they don't want you to refreeze their board on the following turn, because you can just sacrifice it into their existing board that you already froze to then refreeze everything.
Yeah.
That's a really insane card. To be honest, like this card is absolutely batshit insane, but maybe that's what Tempo Mage and Freeze Mage need. I don't know. This card is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I don't think they need it. To be honest, I think
they don't need it. But
it is super strong.
It's a really good card, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Could you cost it differently to make it balanced? Like, what would you go?
Oh, this is a mage card too, by the way. It's a mage card. Yeah.
6 mana, 4/4 seems like it might be more reasonable because there's already Blizzard on 6.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that you're gonna want to, like, if let's just say you want to clear the board, right? You're going to forgo the value of the body for that, and I don't know. It's like, it is good. I don't know if it's crazy good though. It depends on what deck you're playing, I think. And if you're playing like things like Flame Strike and just full board removal type of things, then yeah, this card is crazy, crazy good if you're playing that. If you're not, if you're playing more of a tempo kind of base game, I don't know. I don't know if this is...
I mean, Garrison Auctioneer gets stealthed, and you go freeze, right? And then they sap, and you replay, or they kill it, and it's still frozen. So it's one of those... it's kind of an irritating effect, because you never really get away... if they kill it, it still double freezes their stuff.
Yeah, it definitely double freezes, but it's a matter of you following up with, actually completing the value, right, for the freeze that you get on the minions.
Shatter.
Oh God, that's true. One day, one day that would be good. No, yeah, maybe, I don't know. Maybe it actually is a consideration in something like if you have a card like this, where you're going to get, you know, multiple rounds of freezers. It's not just like a one Frost Nova. You know, the problem with Frost Nova guys is that it's not a body, right? So you just literally pause the game. You're not removing anything unless you have a Doomsayer. And so it's like, unless you follow up with something really strong, then you don't
get anything. Here's a question. I'm going to put this in a question that's very easy to answer. Would you play this if it were just Battlecry? A general answer would, like, as a 6-mana 4/4, whatever, it'd probably be, probably as just Battlecry. So when you slap it onto Deathrattle, I mean, I feel like the Deathrattle has less value, but its potential to the snowball is crazy because you freeze them and then you refreeze. Like, that's two free Frost Novas, effectively, with the body slapped on top. That's a really dangerous thing to add to a class that already has so much freeze. But the effect, the idea behind it is just excellent. I think you could recost it. You kind of don't want to bridge the gap between Nova, Cone of Cold, and Blizzard. Like, you don't want them to have another card between those that fits the perfect curve that also freezes. Because then you end up, like, in stasis territory where the opponent's just looking at you playing solitaire. That's
non-interactive, which is, we know Blizzard hates that, but no, in general though, I think freeze, I don't actually mind freeze as a mechanic, and I do like the, you know, if you're gonna make a powerful card for mage, this is probably the type of powerful card you want to make for mage.
So I agree.
So I like it. I definitely like it. Kruxor, the name still beats it all. All right, so 5-mana. The next one is a 5-mana Banshee Queen and a 4/4 body, a legend card. All battle cries and death rattles are nullified. So I don't know.
They don't trigger. They trigger, but they don't, right? So you can play a battle cry minion, but it's effectively pre-silenced. Like, the battle cry just won't happen, is the way you have to look at it.
It won't happen. Oh, you mean at all? You mean in their hands? Okay, yeah.
So, like, if they play, I don't even know what they could play. Like, let's say Mind Control Tech, and you have 4 minions, it's just not going to happen.
Wait, so this is only the cards that are in people's hands, not in the decks and everything,
No. It's, if there's a Death Rattle on board and it dies, it won't trigger. Battlecry that's getting played, it won't trigger.
Right, so it's just...
It's not silencing all those minions for the rest of time. It's not taking minions everywhere and silencing them. It's just, while it's on the board, it cancels out any potential trigger for either of these.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of cool. That's cool. I like that. It's kind of a cool name too, Banshee, right?
I love the Banshee theme. Yeah, I think this card could be an epic and a 5-mana 4/5, and it would still be fun.
Yeah, because a lot of times if this thing comes down and there's just like nothing on the board to remove it, then, you know, they have to use either a spell, but they can't use, like, say, a Corruptor, right, to shoot it, or any, you know, card that has high value in that regard. That's pretty good. I like that. And then the Death Rattle, oh my God, if you could remove Sylvanas, oh man, with this, and just throw this card down and remove Sylvanas, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, but I think that's what the card wants to do. Like, it kills Reno, and that's a problem, is if it's a legendary, you won't tech a legendary against Reno, because it's a one-to-one ratio. 50% of the time, you won't have your card when they play it, so it's not going to work. But as a 5-mana 4/5 epic, I think this could be more consistent if you want to target specifically Reno decks. I mean, you nullify Azure Drakes, you nullify Twilight Drakes, you nullify Mind Control Tech, you nullify Earthening Farseer,
It's not even Reno decks. Yes, it's not even Reno decks. It's all decks at this point.
But most decks, I don't know about most decks, though. Like, I feel like some decks, like Miracle Rogue, doesn't give a shit. Like, there are a lot of decks that, you know, they just won't really care all that much about your Banshee Queen. It's going to be there for those decks, like mid-range Druid, that just goes, I play Choose One, not Battlecry. Fuck you. And they just stasis you down. Yeah, they play their mid-range stuff, and you're there looking at their board growing and growing while you're relying on those gimmicks, and they just nullify them instantly. It's made for those... it's a potentially powerful mid-range card is what it is. I really like the concept of it.
Yeah, it is very... Somebody in chat says it's similar to Lothar. Yeah, it has a very similar effect, not necessarily like what it, like the text of it, but the result of it is pretty similar. It's kind of cool. I mean, you can't use spells versus
I mean, at least I can play my minion. Yeah. That's what I hated about Lotheb is here's your entire hand. Fuck it. This is like, here's your minion. You want to play Corruptor? You don't get the Battlecry. It's still a 5-4. It challenges the queen. We're on even foot. All is fine, right? And if you play Azure Drake, I've got an edge. You know, I played this card and I countered your Azure Drake. It's a 4-5, let's say. Because I think 4-4 is a bit, you know, in the territory where never played. It's just, you know, you make it and you think it's going to be awesome, but it's just bad.
Yeah.
I think you need
to be a 4-5. This crushes. I mean, this really negates value from Aya and Cairn. And yeah, just, it's cool.
I love that one. Yeah. You know, this card is.
It's cool.
Is absolutely. I'm going to have to feature it somewhere somehow. I mean, this card is brilliant. I just love the concept.
Yeah. Good job, Cruxor. I like the cards for sure. Let's see. Noxious has a couple here that we're going to do. Let's bring it. I think it's two Warlock cards. Let's see. The first one is a 5-mana spell, epic card, Demonic Grimoire. Add 5 random demons to your hand and then play Cruel.
That's one of the ideas, by the way, of course.
At least you get like additional cards. That's good. Yeah. That's definitely good. Let's just talk about that card first.
So, well, the idea was just to give Warlocks a way to get demons in their hand that they otherwise wouldn't have. Like, you know, the Cabal Trafficker that we got? The 6-mana 6/6 that gives you a demon at the end of your turn. That was a cool card. I thought it was fun at the very least. It wasn't very good, but it was fun. And I thought we needed more of that kind of stuff. And Demonic Grimoire was my attempt to create another Cabal Trafficker type card that gives you no body on the board. So very, very slow. Lets you, you know, the fact that this card costs you 5 mana means you don't have to life tap if you're looking for card advantage. You can actually rely on it to fill up your hand. So you can play, you know, Flame Imp, Voidwalker, whatever the fuck you want, you know, in the early game. And eventually you slap this, get a full hand of demons, and go at it again. Doesn't mean the cards are going to be good because they're demons, and we all know how that tends to go. But it's a very bad, there's a big spread between, you know, Jaraxxus and Blood Imp. But you'll get a wide array of stuff to play. And that's just the idea behind the card is there's a good chance you pick up a 6-drop from this. There's a good chance you pick up a follow-up for the late game and maybe some like a combination play where you have like 1/1 drop, a 3-drop, and a 2-drop. Like there's all these combinatorics with demon costs that oftentimes on turn 6, you'll have something to do. And it's going to be, you know, I think on average, very, very playable.
Knowing my luck, I'm going to get like 5 of the 3-drop 5/5s that do 5 damage to me every time a card comes down. Oh, that's going to be pretty interesting, but I like it. I mean, the Warlock needs a card that adds cards to their deck, because Cruel is literally a terrible card without the ability to add new cards. I mean, when you compare it to like all these other classes that add to their 30-card deck, I mean, it's just insane that Warlock doesn't have that card, you know, and when the legend was meant for it to be some kind of crazy, you know, like Deathwing Dragon Lord type of thing. And it's not, you know, it's like you end up having to fill your deck with just gross demons just to make that card even somewhat valuable. So, yeah, I like this card. I think this card is absolutely necessary in the class right now. Okay, the next one, 3-mana, it's a Warlock card again, 4/3 body, epic rarity, and Evil Afflictor. Whenever you summon a demon, give your opponent a cursed card. Wow!
that's
brutal, man.
A 3-mana 4/3 is terrible. A 3-mana 4/3 in a class that has already like better cards to play is just not going to see play. But whenever you summon a demon means... If you play Implosion, if you have Imgang Boss, if you play any sort of minion generating card like Bane of Doom, if you play Cruel the Unshackled afterwards, and you just summon a bunch of stuff, that's like those are the ways you summon demons, and you give your opponents a cursed card. The cursed card is a 2-mana card that was first found in Curse of Rafam, which if they got the Curse of Rafam in their hand, they would take 2 damage at the beginning of their turn. Or they have the curse card. So now whenever you play a demon or you summon one, they get a curse card they have to get rid of. So the idea is that you combine this with a bunch of 1-drops in the mid-game to flood. And it combines itself very well with Demonic Grimoire, which is why I kind of came up with the same concept, where you fill your hand up with jank, possibly cheap jank. You play Evil Afflictor, dump a bunch of 1-cost demons, and they're just taking a huge amount of curse damage every turn. which I thought was kind of cool. So that was the idea.
Kind of broken, man.
I don't know. I disagree. I think the deck is already, like, that archetype is already dead and never going to come to life for a while, but
I think you could. I mean, I like the whole giving them a curse card, but I think you need to make this card more expensive, though, because, you know, early game, yeah, it's just like, oh, they're going to get one curse card, no big deal, and remove the evil afflictor. But late game, oh my god, you're going to get like four or five. You're going to give your opponent like four curse cards.
You have four demons in your hand?
Let's just say you do, all right? Say you give them three or four. That's like their entire turn having just to remove the curse from their decks. I mean, that's like at least half their turn, removing just the curse cards from their deck. And then they still have to deal with all those cards you put on the board. That is a huge, huge like swing, like almost an unrecoverable swing, actually, late game, unless you have a cheap, board removal, and then you remove like one or two of them. You don't even remove all the curse. You still take some damage next turn. I think that's crazy powerful.
Like, interesting. I don't view it as powerful as you see it, obviously. I mean, I think the card has crazy potential, but it's like, you know, the Mind Blast Velen shenanigan. You know, it's like, it looks good, but then you build a deck and you're like, this isn't consistent. Fuck this. It's like, this is awful. I think this is kind of what I fall into when I look at this potential archetype.
Yeah, I think so too.
Is the likelihood that it works is so slim that I wouldn't worry too much about its potential brokenness. But
yeah, I know what you mean. I do like the text, though.
The effect itself, I think, is cool enough, though, to warrant some exploration maybe on Blizzard's side. I like the idea of playing with a curse card more. I feel like that mechanic should have been something that stayed around with the Warlock class. I think it has the potential to become like an iconic Warlock mechanic, right? Like, instead of trying to push like the weird Murloc thing they made you remember that in the...
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, that weird Murloc thing was the Sea Devil Stinger or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was kind of weird. Like, it doesn't fit anymore in the Warlock arsenal, yet it's there. And I would like to see them go for the Warlock theme a bit more heavily. And I think that's a perfect fit as a mechanic to expand on.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, we have a patron that did send a bunch of cards here. I did want to take a look at him, especially because he's one of our patrons, our awesome patrons. So let me bring up some. They have a lot to do with each other. So I'm going to see if we can actually pull out a few, and then maybe we'll save some for next week, Rodden. Let me see if I can find it real quick. But it's kind of cool. I mean, what he's done with some of these cards is actually pretty neat. The fact that they're intertwined, actually, some of these cards. So, you know, they turn into another card, you know, and that sort of thing. It's hard to explain. All right, takes a second here. All right, so let me bring it up. All right. Right, so he even introduces a new keyword too. Okay, so here is Deathlock. He's the first one. I kind of had to bring up all of them, to be honest, just because they...
Deathlock, okay, I think...
Grimlock, or Gromlock. I keep thinking of the Transformer. Grimlock. The Dinobot, man. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
you know, your Transformers.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. All right, we got lots of cards here coming, all of them coming up here. So he has a new keyword, altar. Actually, let's just talk about the altar one. So let's not talk about this hold the front. So altar is he even has this too, to define altar. Replace a card in your hand with a new card.
Okay, so you basically transform it while it's in your hand. I see.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess it could literally be called transform a card into, right? Because there are some, like, don't we have effects like these? Like, what's the name of Shifter Zeros that transforms itself?
Yeah.
I feel like you could transform it.
Yeah, you could. But
I think the mechanic could still be used that way. Unless Alter does something else entirely.
Yeah. Either way, I mean, the cards themselves, though, are all intertwined. So we have four cards here. One's a 9-drop, 9/9 Murloc, Deathlock. And the battle cry is destroy all other minions. So this is like the end point, basically. I think if you can get to Deathlock, he's a good one.
Deathwing, dude. Yeah. Holy crap.
Exactly. Then you got Grimlock. Actually, you have, let's do Myrlodin. Myrlodin next, which is like a Murloc Illidan. It's like a Murloc Illidan.
Look at that Photoshop scale, dude.
Exactly. That's awesome.
So sick. So sick.
7 drop, 6/6 Murloc, Battlecry, alter a card to Deathlock. Whenever you play a card, summon a 2/1 Murloc. Okay, so it has the Illidan aspect of it, but it also turns him into Deathlock, right? Or alter a card into Deathlock.
Card. So basically,
oh my god. Yeah. So any
you get to transform anything you want. No, it's not. I don't think it's on the board. It's in your hand. Alter is always in your hand.
Oh, it's in your hand. Okay.
Yeah. Wow, so the idea is that you get more. You streak battle cries into one another, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you one thing though. Before there's actually like an art piece you could use for this. That's like perfect. I'll give it to you through Skype.
Is it the little opening? The little opening containers, and then there's a container inside of it, and then there's a container inside of it.
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
That's not what it is. I'll give you the actual art piece.
I started at the end, guys. Sorry. I should have started at the beginning. So the first one's actually a 3-drop, 3/2, Khalifa. They're all legends, by the way. Battlecry, alter a card to Grimlock, and then Grimlock's a 5-mana card, a 4/4 Murloc. It has charge.
With charge. Yeah, charge,
of course. Gromlock. It's Gromlock, sorry. Battlecry, alter a card to, you know, Myrlodin. And then Myrlodin is the obviously the 7... the 7 drop. So definitely a little play on all the different legend cards that we have, but these are just Murloc versions of it.
And then Myrlodin will come into the board and alter a card to Deathlock, so you can actually finish the series. So you start with a 3-drop, it creates a 5-drop, it creates a 7-drop, it creates a 9-drop, and then you've done everything, and you've pretty much... Like, you've sacrificed along the way a total of 3 cards, because you've sacrificed one to make Gromlock, you've sacrificed a card to make Myrlodin, and you've sacrificed a card to create Deathlock. However, because they're so powerful, I think that's a sacrifice that's worth doing. And in a deck like Reno, I feel like this is perfect. Here's this deck card that's completely terrible that I can't use, right? It's like, this deck card I have here is useless. Let me transform it to Gromlock. And then Gromlock comes in. Here's this other tech card I don't need. Let me transform it into Myrlodin, which is really good. It's a 7-mana 6/6 that gives you 2/1 Murlocs. And then you can transform that into a better Deathwing or a Twisting Nether with a body. It's pretty strong.
Yeah, it's definitely strong.
I mean,
this is
a really powerful
series. I don't think you're wait, alter a card to Myrlodin. Yeah, I don't think you're really losing any value every time you play these cards. Right?
I mean, technically, you might if you play like combos, but you are gaining really good minions that are playable standalone.
Yeah, so you could in theory replace like your end game, like your Nazoth or your Reno or something like that. But these cards are all very, very good on their own. Maybe Gromlock is the worst one. Khalifa.
I mean, 5-mana 4/4 charge is good. The question is like, is Alter a random mechanic or is it something you choose? Because if it's a random effect, then it's a little bit tougher to play with, right? Like, if it alters stuff at random, then that's very sketchy.
No, it has to be. It has to be. It'd be too crazy.
Well, then it's probably, on average, only playable in combo-less Renos, right?
Yeah. Okay,
I mean, right, that kind of makes sense. Otherwise...
I like this design, though, because it's not like C'Thun, where it's like... Or even any of the tribal decks where...
Okay.
You just play all those cards. Like, it's like, okay, Jade, I just play all the cards. Like no matter what. And then that's already half of my deck, and that it's consistent. It's the same for every single one. This one's different because, this one is like its own little mini line inside of your deck. More so, line of value, I guess you could say. Potentially transforming things into good things. I think Gromlock probably could be 5/5. I think you should get like a... Even value right at the second card, I think. That would be better. But I do like the fact that it's like a tiny set within your deck. Instead of just having a very full deck, like huge set that occupies so much of your deck.
Pretty cool. I love that it's one card slot. Yeah, that's just my... It's like a golden monkey all in one. That's kind of what it is.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It definitely is. All right, yeah, Rodden, thanks for submitting those, and Croxsword, thanks for submitting the ones earlier. Definitely good segment, good Mechatork segment, and of course Noxious, thanks for making those two cards too.
Of course,
we're gonna do some Q&A now, guys, and for those of you that have written into ValueTown at ChainManV.tv, gonna read some out here. Let's see, Brenton message. I was thinking about, or thinking back to the start of Standard Mode, and when we also got some card nerfs. I imagine it's quite possible we'll get another round of nerfs sometimes in the next few months. Why don't we ever get direct card buffs? If we have, I certainly missed it.
Okay.
Number one, do you think they'll ever see card buffs? Like, do you think we'll ever see card buffs? Most likely to the basic and classic sets. And two, what cards would you like to see buffed so we can expand our standard set strategies, and how might they be buffed?
So this is a very big question. I'll start off by saying that Blizzard's previous response to a question like that was that they wanted to keep balance fresh, not by buffing and nerfing too much, but rather by introducing new cards. That's not always functioned in the past, especially with the Adventures coming out. It doesn't really shake up the meta much. But I think my biggest gripe with the idea of buffing some of the basic cards is I want the basic and like in classic set to be shit.
I do too.
I'm the guy who says that the least basic and classic cards we see 2 years down the line in our meta decks, the better off we'll be, because the metagame will shake up a bit. That's not to say I want none. I just don't want them to be auto includes across the board because we buffed them to the standard of power. I would rather see, you know, nerfs done to cards that are overperforming in terms of, like, Arcanite Reaper is kind of a fair card, but at the same time, it's a Pyroblast for 5 mana. And I mean, like, there are a lot of outliers like this that exist that just do so much. And like the Pirate Warrior deck that we have in the current meta, aside from patches, like 27, like I'd say 27 out of 30 cards are in the basic set or in the classic basic. When you compute that, you realize, well, okay, this Aggro Warrior deck is never going away. And I don't like that very much. On the flip side, the other side of the argument, and it bothers me to no end that I'm not sure we'll get a solution to it, is new players are getting fucked right now. Like, the cost of entry to any deck is pretty high. Hearthstone is overall, like, compared to a lot of games, even though it doesn't seem that way, rather generous. That's not to say that it's better than other games. Like, Duelist, I think, does generosity better. Other card games tend to be more generous with the rewards that they give you. The issue is the way the deck building works in those games oftentimes requires that you have, like, 3 to 4 copies of a legendary, which means you need maybe 3 times as much in terms of rewards to compete. Whereas in Hearthstone, that's not necessarily the case. So the reward scaling is okay. The issue is the catch-up mechanisms just don't work. And right now, you could be starting a new account today, play for a month, and still have nothing done, probably, if you're completely complete novice. And that's aggravated by shitty matchmaking. So I think the basic set being buffed would help those players, but it would make the metagame so much staler in the long term that it's almost as though if they do that, they have to rotate the basic set out, and that kills the purpose of a lot of the concept behind Standard.
Yeah, I mean, I like, if you're asking me, like, what I would like to see, it's going to be more like what I've heard, you know, Magic does. Like, just no basic, no classic set. Like, just have completely new giant sets, you know, per season, whether per year or whatnot. And you want to add some to it, too. You want to do some expansions during the year, too. Then that's fine, too. But, like you said, right now, classic and basic, and this is one of the issues with the whole constructed format. Or not constructed, sorry, the sideboard format. The sideboard format doesn't work is because there are just too many good cards that are in the basic set or just in every single variation of, you know, that class's best card, like Shaman, for instance, or, you know, whatever. You know, like, Shaman probably has 16 cards, maybe 14 or 16 cards are exactly the same in all the great builds. You know, we talked about Evolve. Evolve has literally like 20 of the same cards as like the mid-range Shaman. You know, it's like, it's just the two Evolves and the two Doppelgangsters, and, you know, that are different. When you keep having that, then, you know, it limits your ability to do formats like sideboarding and that and whatnot. And it just doesn't change. It doesn't help the new players, like you said, Noxious. Like, new players getting in, you know, they want to start on the same foot as everybody else. So, you know, having a completely new set, at least the set that's, you know, the main current one, or the one that's competitive, right, is going to be much better. It does suck from the standpoint of value for all the people that have been in the game for a long time, and they're obviously more concerned with keeping players that are playing the game, you know, for as long as they can, continuing to monetize them. So it's a tough problem, but from the standpoint of competitive, I think it's always been a better thing to completely replace everything with a 150, 200 new cards, right? Just like something enormous. Not maybe, like, how big is the set right now? It's like 500 cards?
It's absurdly big compared to...
huge. But, so anyways, I think that would probably be the best way, but they're not going to do that. And to answer your card, I guess your question directly, what cards... could get buffed. They don't buff it for one thing, is because if you continue buffing cards, then power creep power creep isn't really an issue because you're buffing old cards, but power level is an issue though. And I think they're trying to, you know, like rein in the power just increase, you know, every time they come out with a new set. So I think if you buff old cards, then it's tough. But there are some cards that I wish would see some play. But I don't necessarily think that they need to be buffed. Like, I actually think I like where they're at. It's just the cards that are being played are too powerful, in my
opinion.
Too
good for that set. Exactly. It's like if Warsong Commander was always going to be good forever, you'd find the metagame stale if Play Patron was around. Or, like, it potentially could be stale and could potentially be an issue.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a fact about, like, if Rockbiter was still one mana, like, I still hate it. I still hate the change they made compared to... you know, just making it target a minion only, but they wanted to make it unique and synergize with Wind Fury in a different way than Blessing of Might. So they chose a different route, but I still think nerfs need to happen on these powerful cards in order to keep the games like healthy. The basic set needs to be changed, basically.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay, that's Brenton. Let's see. We've got another question from, let's see, who else? Okay, we got one from Orlando Nurs. I'm a longtime audio-only listener of the show. In your recent episode, you mentioned how sorry you are the audio-only listeners can't fully enjoy Smilestone. So I thought maybe you could, for once, make a laughstone instead, where you all have to laugh wholeheartedly for 20 seconds, like at the end of old shows from the 80s. I'm sure this would be a lot of fun. Anyhow, keep up the good work.
What the fuck? That is such an awesome suggestion.
That's a good suggestion.
We're gonna have to implement that at some stage.
Okay, we're gonna have to do that. I don't know if we do
I'll
that.
I'll start us off, and you guys have to follow after the absurdity begins. You're gonna have to laugh at my laugh, and maybe then I'll laugh at yours, and we'll have a circle of like 20 seconds.
This is a question or answer type of laughing session. That could be funny. Okay, how about this? How about this, Leo? We will we'll do a laugh stone instead of the Smilestone next show. How about that?
I'm down.
I'm gonna have to have like a genuine laugh. That's gonna be hard.
You just have to. You just have to giggle.
Oh my God,
that's fine. You don't have to go crazy on a laugh.
All right. Let's see. Ahmed N. It says, greetings from the land of Ancient Watchers. We seem to always get a question from him. With pirates ruling Gadgetzan while the goons crying in the corner, I think they should vote out the Dawn and seek Buccaneer as their new leader and start making better, cheaper weapons for Hunter and Paladins. Do you think Buccaneer and his bro Patches will get the usual pre-BlizzCon nerf? I think Buccaneer is the worst offender, as I think if Patches wasn't even printed, this guy is a broken one drop. I disagree with the last part of that. I think he's super strong, no question, for sure. But I don't think he's broken. I don't think that turn one is broken with just him versus...
With just him, no. That's the thing, is it's the package, right? Like, we've kind of talked about this. And it's frustrating because there's no good solution. Because I think, ultimately, everyone that has a semi-decent collection in Hearthstone has no issue with it. Right, like everyone who's got the cards from BlackRock to build a dragon deck doesn't really mind because they've got other matchups to beat. Anybody who's playing a Reno deck has no issue because they've got Kazakus and Reno and the legendaries to support it and the good epics to make it work. But it's the new players that come in that just get destroyed by that stuff. And it's so disheartening. I don't even have an answer for them. There's no good basic starter deck to help with that.
Yeah, I agree. It's God, I mean, what to do? I still think patches, it sucks for patches, because patches by himself isn't that bad. Like, patches later in a game isn't that bad. It's just right. Patches on turn one is really, really bad. So this isn't something you can fix by fixing things around, you know, patches. And so I actually think patches is more of the culprit, right, at this point for messing up, or not messing up, but creating the metagame that we have. Because, yeah, Pirates might still be played, but not a no-brainer, that's for sure. You know, definitely for some of these classes especially, it wouldn't be a no-brainer. For Shaman, I don't even think Shaman it would be a no-brainer. I think, you know, there are a couple cards. Very,
yeah. There are still a couple cards you would play there, but...
Maybe.
It's kind of easier to tech, I think.
Warrior for sure. Warrior could still be played. I could see that. But Shaman, there are choices. Like, Shaman's such a rich class. You can play... You know, if some people are dropping bolts, you can include the bolts again. You can include the Thanos again. You can just make your Malshan portal better instead. You know, like, there are other things that you could do that still keep the Shaman at the same level. You know, even losing that initial push, where something like, I don't know, I think Warrior takes a bigger hit for sure. But Warriors,
after that goes away,
And the main thing with the Warrior, the reason why the Warrior takes a big hit is A, Frothing Berserker gets buffs from that extra one would drop, and then B, it's an extra pirate, so anything that gives you an upgrade because of a pirate, you know, any of those prerequisites are much easier when you have two pirates on the board on turn one, three pirates on turn one sometimes if you have the coin. So that's the biggest problem right now. It's tough. Tough life right now. Let's see. Actually, he had another question too. I forgot this part. I'm confused on why Reno Lock is rising in popularity on the ladder, as it has not a great matchup. And this is based on Vicious Syndicates and Tebow Storm analysis. With top decks, while Reno Mage is the opposite and becoming less popular. Am I missing something? So basically, why is Reno Lock Mage becoming less popular, even though it has great matchups, you know, against the top decks, popular decks? And why is Reno Lock getting more popular, even though it has bad matchups against the popular decks?
So here's one of the things is, like, the reported win rate of Reno Lock is not the best win rate that Reno Lock can achieve. I think is one of the big things you have to draw as conclusion, because it's a very tough deck to play that seems like it plays itself. One of the big things that Reno Lock does is it eats Shaman alive. Like, it has a 50-50 against aggro, and it beats all the other variants, including the random control one, right? I say 50-50, but it's got to be like 47-53 or like 49-51, something ridiculously close to a 50-50 against aggro Shaman. It's really not that hard. Like, it gets tougher when we're talking about, like, the aggro Warrior. You know, those are a little bit more difficult. And even then, it's still close to 50-50. So if you're, like, a really good Reno player, your win rate against those decks is very close to that 50% mark that you report. You beat Reno Priest, and you also happen to beat Dragon Priest. So that's another deck that's in the metagame. So I don't really know why it would have that many bad matchups. I guess, like, if you start looking at mages and hunters and druids, then Reno Lock struggles. But how good are really those decks anyway? Like, it's funny that Reno Lock's worst matchups are the worst decks. That's how it works, right? Like, the worst decks against Reno, like, do well against Reno Locks, but rest of the field, Reno Lock just kind of stays there and does what it wants. Whereas Reno Mage, when it comes in, has similar weaknesses, and its only edge is really the Reno Lock matchup. Like, the reason Reno Mage is rising in popularity or not as popular is because the only extra thing it beats is the Reno Warlock.
Yeah.
I guess, like, It's a very broad question, but I'd say it's just good against the right decks. Reno Lock is just good against the right decks.
Yeah. And it's refined, too. It's very, very refined. I mean, it's gone through multiple iterations at this point, and it's become pretty clear to, you know, how to play it. It's got a level of margin of error, too, given that it has so much board removal. So it's a deck that's a little bit less forgiving than
it is unforgiving.
It's unforgiving or more forgiving? I think it's more.
I think it's actually like one of the things the deck does is there are many turns like in the early game. So beating an aggro deck with that deck is a piece of cake in terms of how to pile the deck. The only way you play is play a removal on curve and win. Like that's generally the kind of the gist of it. When the deck becomes hard to pilot is against your equal to bad matchups. Like then it takes an actual like degree in arena locking to take it like to pull it off.
Right.
And then it's not forgiving. So it is forgiving against a highly aggressive meta in terms of how to like how many mistakes you can make, because you can't make mistakes. Like the games are so short and straight to the point that it's really hard to fuck up. But against other like mirror match Reno is extremely skill intensive. Mid-range Shaman is actually pretty tough as well, as weird as it sounds. You have to conserve your resources, not go all in too quick on the AoE.
And then so not die to Bloodlust either.
Right, like set yourself up so you don't get punished by that extra board state that you greedily hellfired something you didn't need to, and now suddenly there's another board and you're still out of it. Like it's a pretty tough deck to play, so it's forgiving against like some decks as far as difficulty goes, but I think it's unforgiving as a whole. Like it's pretty tough to pilot properly.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Okay, well, I think that's going to be it for the questions. Let's see. I think Laughstone. Let's see, we're getting some message here. I think Laughstone is much better than Smilestone. Evil Laughstone, Gigglestone. So many possibilities.
Gigglestone.
Oh man.
So you just get like sub stones of Laughstone.
I gotta figure out what song, because I have like Smile as our Smilestone song. So
we could have Bake a Pretty Cake.
Yeah, but I can't use the actual song. I have to use a rendition of it. So,
oh, you can make one.
I can make one.
That could be our like our next Patreon goal.
Oh my god, that'd be hilarious.
Of the make a
Rap
cake.
Stone. All right. Well, why don't we wrap up the show? It's been a great show. Just the two of us.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, we talked about just a bunch of topics off the top of our head. So
good stuff. You want to do some shout-outs before we go?
Sure, and shout-outs to Complexity as usual for supporting me and also the way the team is going. Going into 2017, I hope it's going to be a great year. Thanks to you for, of course, putting the show together and just getting stuff done when it comes to that. And shout-out to, I guess, your work on other shows as well, right? Like, we talk a lot about Value Town, but you also do quite a bit of work on in the Overwatch area, and you also cover other TV shows that he started, you know, with the no spoilers thing, I think, believe.
Yeah, spoiler alerts. Yep.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
True. And then we've actually got Streamer Showdown tomorrow, guys, that Noxious is going to be hosting. I'm just going to be running stuff behind the scenes, let this guy do what he does very, very well. Let me show you the promo. I actually have a promo screen here that I didn't have ready until now.
It's fine.
I'm so good at doing shoutouts. I swear.
You're talented.
It's just like freaking amazing how many times I forget stuff. And here we go. So tomorrow, it's tentatively at 4 p.m. Depends if Eloise and Dog are doing very well in Gang Wars, the Amaz's tournament that's going on right now.
Tournament, yeah.
But if not, it's going to start at 4 p.m. If they are still playing, we'll probably start at 5 or something like that. But Nox is going to be hosting. Dog's going to be playing. Disguised Toast coming back. He's the returning champ from the last Streamer Showdown we have. And then Eloise is going to compete. And if you didn't see the first one, it's a game show that we do that's really, really fun. And kind of think like Jeopardy, Jeopardino, and Hollywood, you know, game nights type of thing. A little bit less trivia. There is one round we do trivia, but the rest of it is more like Pictionary and guessing pictures and you know, Family Feud
Pictionary
and dank memes. I mean, we got it all. Like it's definitely a really, really funny.
Pictionary.
So yeah, definitely check that out tomorrow. It's gonna be on this channel too. And yeah, just give a shout out to Noxious for, you know, doing the show with me like this entire year. And has it been the full year? Yeah, it has, right?
Feels like it. I
maybe
feel
in
like it's
April,
been, yeah.
Maybe in March. I think maybe in March is when he started up.
Early this year.
Yeah, definitely early this year. So almost this year, but you know, this is definitely the last one for 2016. So it's been a great year. We did our end of the year last week, but you know, it's definitely been a great one. New Year's, coming up this week, and hope you guys have a safe New Year's you know, definitely have fun, but be safe. And yeah, we'll probably be back. We'll definitely be back next week. But if you missed any of the show, you can catch it on youtube.com/ChamMV. I'll be posting it a little bit later tonight. I've got so many. So I had 6 shows in 3 days, or I do have 6 shows in 3 days ending tomorrow. So I can't post all the VODs all at once, or else my subscribers get like pissed off and they just like unsub. Like I did that one day. I had like 500 people unsub because I spammed the crap out of them with like videos. So I'm trying to be a little bit more careful with that. But I'm going to try to post it a little bit later tonight. So might not be immediate because I still have to post in filtered ones. So be on the lookout for that. If you're on iTunes, you'll definitely see it tomorrow morning as always. And yeah, just support the Patreon if you enjoy the show, and follow the channel if you like the Twitch channel too. But until next week, guys, for Noxious and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next week. Peace out. Peace. Oh, there's the music.